We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
Okay, well, we have finished the Origin Story series, which I think it was a great series. I had great conversations with the folks that opted to do the series with us. So that was really fun. If you missed the series this summer, like, this is not at all like self-promotion, but definitely go back and listen to some of those interviews. They're really cool. And I think it was a neat opportunity for people to talk about things in their lives that they don't necessarily talk about in a lot of public spaces, certainly not in business podcasts.
Yep. And I loved the variety of backgrounds and expertise. And there are some founders, there are some consultants, there are product people, there are non-product people. It was neat to hear the commonalities and the differences across, you know, all of those different permutations.
Yeah, I think it's a nice way to highlight some different voices within the larger tech community. So we are recording today on a Monday, the very, very end of August. We are getting ready as a family to enter a really busy season. And our typical sort of plan of attack when we're entering a season that's really busy is to really like shore up our resources and make plan, get support, ask for help, plan ahead. And we thought we'd done a really good job of doing that until this weekend, when our nanny had a medical emergency in her family and so needed to leave really abruptly, which has just, I think, set both of us kind of spinning.
I'm so pissed off about this. I don't even have a right to be, but I'm still pissed off. Like, it's like we have planned our lives around certain things, and when it cuts off with no notice, we have no time to find help. We have like concert tickets tomorrow night. I don't know if we're even going to be able to get a sitter. We have plans to go out of town. We have airline tickets already purchased with the nanny's name on them. I don't know what's going to happen with that. And it's, our kids are upset. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. When I say I'm pissed, I'm not pissed at her. I'm just pissed in general. It just throws a big wrench into everything. I've already spent hours last night and today trying to repost a job thing and then doing texting with people and then doing a phone interview. And it's just like, I remember this took months last time and dozens of hours to try to sort out. So it really kind of throws a wrench. It's not just time. It's like the distraction of constantly needing. It's one more thing on your to-do list that isn't going to get done for weeks and potentially months.
I think for me too, it's the emotional upheaval. We decided to get a nanny knowing that this fall would be very busy. I'm releasing a book. I'm doing, I don't know, like 6 conferences. It's just busy travel. I made all of those plans knowing that we had someone who was living with us who we trust, who knows our kids really well, and who I feel really comfortable with. So there's just no way to replicate that. Like, we can get another body in here, but not someone, again, knows our kids and we feel really safe and comfortable with on really short notice. So I think that's the really hard thing, is it just adds a ton of anxiety. And I'm already thinking about, like, what do I need to cancel? What can I get out of? What do I need to change? Because I don't feel comfortable being gone so much without really knowing and trusting who's sort of helping out at home.
Yeah. And it's like, I want you to be able to do that so I can like take days off work to handle stuff, I guess. You know, that's just, none of this is part of the plan. Like, we're pretty careful planners and we think these things through and we try to plan as best we can. And so when this one blows up on us, and it's the with zero notice, like if we had even a month's notice, we would be able to figure this out. We'd get very close to having, you know, we'd have sitters booked and we would be close to having another person chosen and all that stuff. But it is, you know, I hate to exaggerate, or it is like a catastrophic failure in the short term of kind of all the plans that we've laid out. And it's not only hitting, you know, your conferences, but it's like you and I have work to do. And I go into the office and you have a lot of stuff, again, that you've planned to do, like you're working on your book and you're doing consulting calls and you're running the tribe groups and all that stuff. You wouldn't have planned to do that if we didn't have all this covered. And so that's not the frustrating thing, but that is an additional frustrating thing, is it's like, I'm not sure what we could have done to avoid this, you know, and I'm irritated that I now have very little confidence moving forward that any plan we lay is going to work, because it has blown up on us. And so it's like, so, I mean, I was thinking yesterday, like, do we just not even hire another one because this didn't work, you know? And so do we just, whatever, should I just stay home all the time and do that? I don't know. I was kind of being ridiculous, but I'm just like, how do we ensure we do not get in this situation again is how I feel right now.
I mean, I feel like we can't, like, and that's part of life. That's part of being a founder and entrepreneur. Like, there are lots of things you can control, but if a key team member leaves, like, we live in a country where people have at-will employment, you know, like, they go. I hear your, like, the temptation to be really burned by this and to say, like, oh, we'll never do this again because no one can be relied upon. And really, in this case, this is not this person's fault. Like, so I don't know that that's the right takeaway to say we're never doing this again. I just feel like there's always in the back of our heads has to be this awareness that all plans can change all the time, and to sort of have backups to our backups, I guess. Or if I call and say to some of these events, like, I really can't make it, I'm really sorry, you know, like, it's not my favorite thing to do at all, but the world will keep turning.
Yeah.
So...
yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree that it's not the correct approach to say we'll never do that again, because it is something that worked out, but it is the emotional response that I'm feeling very strongly, like for the past, whatever, 24 hours or something. And so, and you know, this is first world problems, right? It's like, oh no, your nanny left and you're complaining about it. It's like, we have the luxury of having the ability to have someone who can help us watch our kids. And that is not the point though, right? It's the point is that our nanny is as much a member of our team as like one of my employees might be, you know, one of my team members on the drip team. And if they were to leave, I would feel equally, you know, especially when you're in a small team, if you have a couple VAs and a designer and a developer you're relying on, and one of them leaves, like it is a major upheaval towards your progress. And having, you know, someone who has been watching our kids and allowing us to be able to work and to be able to focus and to not have to worry about this day-to-day management and the texting and the who's going to be here when to cover this and that, and just to know that it's like we take care of it a week at a time. It is, the last 6 months have been very, very different in terms of the amount of effort and time that we have spent just trying to wrangle childcare and the logistics of it and not having things fall through the cracks. And so in my opinion, it is the right approach, what we did, like having someone who is here all the time. You know, she obviously lives in the basement. We talked about that before. That's the right approach. It's just, and even someone transitioning out of that would not have been terrible if we were given a month or two's worth of notice, but we had 15 minutes notice, you know, and it's like, so there you go. So, you know, already this week, like, who's, you know, am I taking paid time off to pick a kid up from school? Yeah, probably this week and for however many weeks until we can find somebody who can help out.
Yeah, I feel like we do the best we can. And then we deal with the crisis and roll on. I'm not sure what other choices we have. I'm learning a lot in this season of my life, actually, about how to be flexible and how to be careful and planning well, but then also like really rolling with things when the plans don't go as anticipated. So I'm also learning like a lot about navigating the back end of my website. For those of you who maybe have not been as keyed in to the podcast over the summer, it's been a tremendous season of growth for Zen Founder as a brand and for me as an entrepreneur. Part of it is as we've made this transition in Minnesota, as I've left my more traditional clinical practice, I'm focusing more and more on working with entrepreneurs and as individuals as more of an organizational consultant, and then doing these tribe groups, the Zen tribes, that have been really a very fun and satisfying thing to do. But man, it's just pushing into the edge of all of my growth points, like doing the technical side of, you know, creating a product on the website and making sure that WooCommerce works the way I expect it to. And the challenge of writing semi-decent marketing copy. I mean, it's all of these skills that are not practiced skills for me, even though I've established myself in one aspect of my career. So I feel like I'm dealing with all of that, like, founder anxiety that I talk with people about all the time, is putting yourself out there, trying, double checking, proofreading, doing your best, and then pressing send and seeing what happens. So it's a lot of growth and anxiety management for myself.
Yeah, I think that's, I feel like that's the perpetual place you find yourself in if you're doing this right, being an entrepreneur, is there's, I guess maybe you get better at it over time, but like the anxiety just increases because the stakes get higher. And I think that you are doing a very good job of learning a bunch of new stuff all at once. I've been watching you do it and, you know, going from, I don't know, just not having a ton of experience, you know, selling via email, like you said, sending emails to the list and talking to people about getting, you know, getting them to sign up for classes. I don't know. You've just done a, you've done a good job of it.
I think it helps that I think it's really important and that there have been enough people who I've worked with who have echoed that it's really important. So, you know, I believe in what we're doing and in the value that it brings to people's lives. So it's like sufficient motivation. I mean, meaning is good motivation. It's important and I want to do it and I want to spend my time on these kinds of topics and questions. So it like helps me tolerate how uncomfortable I feel doing back in WordPress stuff.
Yep. I could totally see that. I think meaning is a good motivator. You know, you'll do a lot of things that make you feel uncomfortable if you truly believe that what you're bringing is so needed by a group of people.
So the tribe groups have been really fun to do. And the way that we've done them this summer, they've been 8 weeks. And they're kind of this combination of what we call curated content. Basically, I bring a subject or a topic or a theme. And there's some open discussion, but then most of our discussion is centered around the theme. And so the theme might be burnout or the theme might be relationships. And it's been, again, it's a learning process where I'm learning how to balance the challenge of specificity with the challenge of being general enough to be applicable to lots of different people from different backgrounds. So how do you have a group of people have a conversation around specific topics that hit all of the right important points, but are also broad enough that are relevant? I'm learning a lot about how to curate content and how to host conversations in a particular way. And then, of course, learning so much about my entrepreneur brothers and sisters and the kinds of pain points that are really most important to them. So we started with some general groups, and now we're running a group that is specific for people who own service agencies. And then we're going to launch in the fall another general group alongside a group that's for couples. So it's basically folks who aren't able to make it to the couples retreat. We're doing something that is online so people can engage with Sean Hesketh and I and Kay Hesketh around topics related to parenting and family and kind of the work-life balance thing, even though I totally hate that phrase. It's really what the group is about.
Yeah, that's super cool. I think it's interesting that you've had so much interest in the Zen Tribes groups that you're already able to kind of narrow and go niche, like have verticalized groups of people who are kind of doing the same thing. It shows you that there is a pretty desperate, it's not the right word, but a pretty substantial need for this type of group.
Yeah, I hope so. I think lots of people need connection and community. And I think lots of people want to have deeper conversations about meaning, anxiety, you know, like people want to have these conversations, but you don't necessarily have them with your business partner and you don't necessarily have them with your spouse at that level. And I think one of the things that like my team and I have been able to offer is this sort of psychological expertise paired with an experienced founder. And that's a cool conversation to have. I mean, it's sort of the podcast conversation each week, but they're important topics. And I hope we do a good job of making them really safe and accessible. I think the last really big point of learning is very much about finishing the book. And where I'm on the last chapter, which is really exciting, but I also feel like it's going to be a total letdown in the sense that it feels done, but it's nowhere near done. Like all of this editing that needs to be done, making sure all the transitions are nailed, making sure we have all of the sources cited properly, and then getting all of the pieces that still have to go together in terms of design and titling and all the details. Like none of the details are done, but all the words are there. So I'm excited. And then also like, okay, gearing up for the next round of what it means to actually finish and ship it and have it put out in the world in a way that is really professionally packaged and well done.
Yeah, it's an astute observation that you're picking up on that, because when you sit down to write a book, you think that the, you know, 90% of the work is writing the book, but you're already able to tell, like, maybe it's 60 or 70. Well, 60, it's probably 50% writing the book, and then it's like 20% editing and revising, or even more. And then, like you said, it's like you need an ISBN, and you need printing, and you need layout, and you need graphics, and you need a cover, and you need on and on and on a sales page, sales emails, you know, the whole deal. So that is, it's good that you're thinking about that now and not like finishing the book and then realizing, oh, I still have, you know, a month or two of all this stuff that I have to take care of. Because that's kind of what I did when I finished my book. Because I was like, oh, now I have to do a cover. And you'll notice the cover of my book is just all black with white writing because of that.
Yeah, I'm trying to mitigate my own disappointment. So I've been talking a lot about my stuff. And I realize I'm like kind of the primary entrepreneur in the family right now. How's it going working for somebody else, having someone else sign your paycheck?
Yeah, it's a trip. I mean, it's like, it is your primary entrepreneur thing. I can tell you're saying it trying not to offend me or something, but like, I have no, you know, issues with that. It's like, for years, I was the one kind of doing the, it was like this stressful risk-taking and learning, and you're knee deep in that now. And I, you know, I have no, there's no two ways about that. Having someone sign my paycheck is actually pretty cool, because I don't have to worry about it bouncing, although I guess my paychecks never bounce, but I don't have to stress about all the minutia of the finances of a company, and the weight of every execution point doesn't fall back to me, even though I had a great team. There's just decision fatigue, and there's stress, and there's always thinking ahead and trying to think of where we're going and what's going to happen and who's the competition. And I still have some of that strategically in my job, but it's definitely a whole different world being able to show up for work and to have good health insurance and to have a 401k and to be able to have the budget to hire team members that I want and be able to pay the salaries that we need to hire the really good people. We had really good people working for us at Drip, and we were all under market, and people, you know, balanced the fun of working on Drip with less pay than they could get if they had gone to, you know, some big Fortune 500 company or something. And so it's nice not to have to make that sacrifice. I think that being part of a bigger team has its pros and cons. The pros are that there are specialists, people, there's somebody that does everything. So like, you literally want, you know, a video made and we just like describe it to someone and it happens, or we want like a whole website design and we just describe it to someone and it happens. It's crazy. Whereas in the past, we'd have to, you know, spend weeks finding a contractor, and it would just take months to get things done because we didn't have staff to do it. But on the flip side, larger teams are hard to navigate. There's a lot of communication that has to happen. I feel like more and more time I'm spending in meetings rather than actually, you know, building product now. And when I say actually building, you know, I haven't written any code on the app, but it's just like thinking through and talking about what to build, how to build, and in what order. And I am slowly fading away from that role as the team grows. Just the core Drip team, the product team was, you know, it was really three people when we got acquired, and it's closer to about 15 now, depending on how you count. And then there's another 30 to 40 people in support and marketing and, you know, other stuff all focused on Drip. So there's been learnings and an adjustment, I think is how I would phrase it.
Yeah, lots of pros and cons. It's like fun to move fast, fun to be able to do some of the things that you haven't been able to do or haven't been able to do them as fast as you wanted to do them. But it also sounds like it's slower in some ways because of the level of communication and care and organization that has to go into decisions and implementing new ideas or new practices.
Yeah, that's right. Because you have a whole 160 person organization to worry about and to keep informed of and to give a heads up to and to take feedback from. And, you know, this, it's all the stuff. And even if the company's fairly agile by the standards of a company of that size, it's still way, way, way more time to communicate all that than if you had a 10 or a 20 person company.
What are you learning about your customers at this point? I mean, I feel like in its very inception, back in the early days, many of the Drip customers overlapped a lot with MicroConf. They were kind of your people you knew or were connected to via a couple degrees of separation. But now your customer base is much bigger and less connected to you. And I don't know. I just wonder how that feels, whether it feels different to serve a much larger group of customers versus kind of serving your own community.
Yeah, I mean, my own community, those folks are still around. I mean, you know, so many of the customers that we had when we were acquired are still there, except for just normal churn. It's like no one left because of the acquisition. So I do still feel like there's a really strong core MicroConf audience of both, you know, it's like SaaS founders, info marketers, conversion marketers, agencies, that kind of stuff. You're right. We do have tens of thousands of people that use the app now. And so it is a wider swath of people. And, you know, it also is industries that I don't totally understand or haven't had a ton of involvement with, like the coaching industry, or even trying to think about, like, you know, a little bit more like bloggers and affiliate marketers. And I obviously know how that stuff works, but I haven't lived and breathed in that space like I have in the ones that, you know, that Drip's core was really about, or the early days were really about. So I've had to do some learning about it, which hasn't really been that hard. There's a lot of resources on it internal to the company, and it's pretty easy. What's nice is if you have users, you can just look at their behavior and hear what they're asking for and what they're not asking for. And since we do have, you know, if someone asks for a certain feature, I don't just chalk it up to yes or no, but I actually will go and like look at their URL and think, what industry, what vertical is this person in? Why are they asking for it based on that? And so I'm kind of doing mental tabulation of what should we build for each of these niches or each of these verticals that we want to stay in, right? Because we don't want to play across every vertical, right? If you're a massively horizontal tool, you have to build stuff for everyone. And that's never been what Drip is. And I don't think it would be a wise choice to do it. So I guess what I'm learning about our customers is there are a lot of them, and there will perpetually be a lot of feature requests. But there has been that for years now, you know, since we had any type of a customer base. What's a trip is that as the product gets more mature, you know, there was a time where we had a somewhat relatively small customer base and the product was starting to mature and the number of feature requests was going down because we were kind of satisfying a lot of the needs of a lot of people. But now as we've gotten larger and expanded in terms of the audience that we serve, that has ratcheted back up again. So we do have a very high volume of requests coming in from all manner of folks, beginners and advanced, and, you know, like I said, coaches and e-commerce, and, you know, just across all the swaths.
It's a learning curve, even at this point in your career where you've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, because stuff keeps changing.
Always more things to learn.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. There's no two ways about that. I think if there wasn't new things to learn, it would get really boring quickly.
Yep, I think you would reinvent it in such a way that it became, you know, that's such a core goal for you, lifelong learning or the commitment to learning. There's no way that you could continue in the job if it wasn't satisfying some kind of intellectual curiosity or learning or mastery of new tasks.
Yeah, that's right.
So as we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, it's a busy travel season. Love to have any of you listeners join us in the end of September, or actually we're going to be in Boston in the middle of September for Business of Software. And then the end of September, we're hosting a couples retreat here in Minneapolis. Rob will be at Converted in middle of October. I will be at Cabo Press the middle of October. And then we'll both be together at MicroConf Europe in Lisbon in November. And then I am taking a week off and not doing anything. And I didn't even, I'll be at Rhodium Weekend in Las Vegas, and there's a couple other things too, but I feel like the podcast is always been kind of the heart and soul of what we've done with Zen Founder. That's the thing that we give away. It's the thing that we use to kind of build community and connect to the entrepreneurs that are interested in these conversations. So we'd love to connect with any of you at any of these events. And if you're interested in being part of any of the tribe offerings, those get rolling out September 13th for the most part. We may add one later in the fall if there's interest. But let us know. Either contact us by the contact form on the website or just sign up directly on the website, and we'd love to have you.
It's at zenfounder.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.